welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today's show, hey, I thought it would be very appropriate in this unfortunate time to have a conceptual eulogy of Benazir Bhutto's unfortunate murder. And to discuss, when I say of the word conceptual, I'm really saying the word why. So I'm going to try to give in this eulogy about this wonderful soul some of the concepts about what the whys are. Because a lot of people in this time, this kind of time, I should say, find this, we'll say, terrible event to be both confusing, if not vexing, and a sense of foreboding and evil, I think, also enters into many people's sentiment. A couple months ago, I mentioned some of the greatness of this particular woman, who was a great spiritual being, who had chosen to serve this world in political ways. She may not have been the very best at everything she did, but she gave the best in many respects. She gave in ways that were the best. Sometimes one doesn't accomplish all the things that they seek to do, yet they do so with such great, we'll say, nobility, the attempt to do the best they can in any situation, and they do so with a sense of humility. Respecting the fact that they may not always be right, and that's okay because they are here to try to make things better, but they can't necessarily always do it perfectly. And so I think it's very important to understand those concepts when we're trying to understand how come evil, and I'm saying it in a very succinct way, has the opportunity and the success, if you want to call it that, of destroying a very significant and helpful and beautiful person who has and was contributing tremendously to the political welfare of our world, besides in many other ways, but that was her key, contribution. And how come, if she has that going for her, and she obviously is doing great works, not perfect, does she get cut down when she's like 54 years old and at the most critical time, potentially, in her life? Yes, she had been prime minister a couple times in the past, but I think that at this moment in history, her potential success at becoming prime minister for a third time and to change some of the, we'll say, tide of events and to move Pakistan towards a moderate and liberal viewpoint, liberal based upon their types of less liberal, more radical issues. But I'm not talking about anything in the relationship to the United States in this situation. This was a critical moment for her. I was looking tremendously forward to this, and I mentioned this a couple months ago. I also mentioned that I hoped that she would survive and kind of cautioned that that may not happen because even she thought it may not happen. And there are these factors that we need to be concerned about when we deal with things like karma, because I'm sure everybody's thinking, that at least the more metaphysically minded listeners are thinking, well, what about that business about karma? I mean, how could she really have deserved to be shot down, blown up, or whatever else may have happened to her in this critical moment when she could contribute so much? What could she have done that would have caused this? Many people say, what did she do to deserve this? And the answer is nothing. That's right, nothing. the answer, at least, again, these are my opinions. And, oh, by the way, if you have, I got so absorbed in this, if you have anything that you would like to say about this subject or anything else dealing with metaphysics or spirituality, give us a call at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. But if you're in Canada, you can reach us at 888-815-9756. Love to hear from you anytime during the show. If you want to email me, you know, thoughts at whylifeis.com, you can do that. I'd be glad to answer those emails, talk to you on the phone even. I'm available. Hey, what the heck? Okay. I said nothing in her karma, in any personal way, in my opinion, caused this event to take place. Now you say, well, okay, then there's no such thing as karma? No, that's not true either. There are two major other kinds of karma that are listed in my textbook and also in virtually everything else you read that deals with karma. And that is, there's a kind of a group karma that has to do with one's associations with others, and it goes all the way to national karma. And then, this is going to maybe surprise you, but there's actually a world karma for all of humanity. And when a person reaches a certain level, we'll call it, of service to others, where the majority of their service is both national and or world, meaning all of humanity, type of karma, then at that particular point, the results of what takes place with them and to them in their life no longer is determined by, in a significant degree at least, by the personal karma. Especially a major event like being murdered 10 days before you're probably going to become prime minister of a very important, if not troubled, country. So you see, this is where we get into understanding something about someone who has attained some level of spiritual discipline, greatness in their life, and has given so much in their life to others that they are no longer really being held to the same criteria in terms of karmic issues. It starts becoming a greater and greater factor about national and especially world karma. Now, for those of you who have some technical mindedness about metaphysics and know something about spirituality in general, but who may have followed some of the Alice Bailey books, or if that's not your cup of tea, maybe some of the theosophical literature, those of you who have that may be asking this question. Okay, Niles, you're saying that she's been great and had greatness. Well, then what level of initiate was she? Well, you know, that's a hard one to say, but I'm not willing to also dodge it either. I'm going to give you my opinion. My opinion is that she was a third-level initiate. That's a pretty advanced level, yes. And that she was approaching about the, getting closer to the middle of that initiation. She had already done a number of renunciations, for those of you who understand what all that means. For those of you who have no clue what I just said, that's okay. It doesn't matter, because I'm going to explain it in a totally different way, so you don't have to know about any of that stuff. But what is it, what does that mean in English? In English, it comes out this way, that she was aware that there was a certain type and ways of evil in the world, and she was aware of how she can change those evils along one of the seven different paths, we'll say, a person can take in a major way, dealing with the rays and energies in the world, and in the whole universe, actually. And so she, in a political way, which is one of the rays, which is the first ray, she was able to identify evil and was able to come up with qualified plans of action with a group of others. Of course, she wasn't working alone. She had a political party. And many people are a little upset that she was like the chairman forever of that party. That doesn't mean absolutely nothing. Believe me, what she was is like the great teacher of that party. It's a better way to look at it. And great teachers are for life. So the use of the word chairman has to do with fitting into the vernacular of Pakistani politics and has nothing to do with what she was really doing in that particular position. Do not get confused by that, believe me. But anyway, getting back to what the statement I was trying to make, she understood evil. And how did she understand evil? Well, she saw evil in the ways that it can destroy countries, because evil works in many different ways. And in each one of these ways, it has a purpose, we'll say, generally to destroy rather than to create goodness. It's seeking to destroy God. And in a weird way, sometimes it even argues that God either doesn't exist or only exists in some bizarre way. Like, the way that God exists is that we're all supposed to kill everybody. Uh-huh. Okay. Now, I think it's important to understand this, that once someone really understands, is conscious of, a specific form of evil, they actually become responsible for doing something about it. I know that sounds difficult. You like to say, well, what if you become a really conscious of something, but you're not capable of being responsible? Well, interestingly, it's consciousness that allows us to become capable. So the two are kind of like hand in hand. You're not getting something leveled on top of you that you can't handle. You obviously can handle it, and she could obviously handle it because of her level of consciousness, which is the same as love and givingness for everyone and everything in a wise and appropriate way. Hers was remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And she was able to do this at a level that she was usually in a mentally, we'll call it, wise position in terms of thinking out what is best and not reacting very emotionally. That doesn't mean she doesn't have feelings, just the opposite. She's a very feeling person, but one in which she had clear and concise understandings in a mental framework of how to best deal with geopolitical issues, not just in Pakistan. I know she was running for Prime Minister of Pakistan, but she was really running for Prime Minister of that entire geopolitical part of the world, and as it interrelates with the Western world. She was an amazing person, and because of that, she was being tied into karmic issues well beyond her own life. What are some of those issues? Unfortunately, she mentioned them, but nobody seemed to notice. How the United States was or was not dealing with the leader of Pakistan, Musharraf, Pervez Musharraf, and also the military in Pakistan, and many other constituents of Pakistan. How the United States has been dealing with the war on terrorism. How the United States has been dealing and partnering with other nations on these very issues. And unfortunately, her position in this situation was that the United States, as people, the people of the United States, actually, their heart was in a good place. But the leadership of our country was making, it has been over time, especially the last 7 years of this administration, has been making a number of errors, especially about how they've been dealing with Musharraf. They, unfortunately, were not recognizing his significant limitations because he was, first of all, a dictator who assumed power through a military junta, there we got it out, and who that was not really acting totally for the benefit, we'll say, of the people of Pakistan or the rest of the world. He was more or less driven by his own ego needs and the seeking of power and control. This is a sign of darkness within him. And unfortunately, therefore, he was somewhat incapacitated, although not completely, in dealing with the problems within his own country. That doesn't mean that she did a perfect job either while she was prime minister. But I think it's important to understand that she was always trying to follow and promote the political process of democracy whereas Musharraf has not been doing so. And this is a big concern, because it means that she was aware of the geopolitical world issues that were interrelated with the country that she was so attached to through her family and her background in politics. But nonetheless, she was also a world-wise person, which Musharraf is certainly not. And so I think when we look at this, we can see now that she was absorbing some of the karma, and this is what happens, from us, from this country's mistakes and the mistakes of dozens of other countries who have failed to support Pakistan in a manner that would lead to both democracy and the betterment of the people who live not only in Pakistan, but who have any interconnection with Pakistan, and to try to disrupt or to get rid of the evil that has grown enormously in Pakistan. About a quarter of the people who live in Pakistan are radical Islamists who would like to do nothing more than to destroy most of the West and to do some terrible other things to other countries as well. We're going to talk more about this, but hopefully this way of conceptually understanding Benazir Bhutto is going to change most people's, we'll say, general thoughts about her to a more, we'll call it, enlightened viewpoint. I hope so. If not, well, I did my best, but I'll nonetheless keep my fingers crossed. And if you have anything to add, be sure to give me a call. We'll be back in about a little over 2 minutes.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Well, we're back, and this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today's show is unusual in that it is a conceptual eulogy to the great and wonderful Benazir Bhutto, who unfortunately has been murdered and taken away from us. But there's more to the story. And if you heard the first segment, hopefully this segment will maybe raise your spirits a little bit, because she's not just completely gone, and I'll explain why. But we have a caller online. Hello, caller. Who are you?
This is Mike. I'm from Connecticut.
Oh, how are you doing? I haven't heard from you in a while. You used to call into KXAM all the time.
Absolutely.
How are things doing for you?
Everything is going pretty good. Pretty good.
Good.
And I just want to say thank you for over the holidays, but you're doing a fantastic job. And you're talking about, you know, the third initiation and the soul merge and stuff like that today. And I know that leader was important to me. I wanted to just ask you a question and get your comment on. If we could just go back for a second to some of the shows that you just had recently about the etheric energy and things like that.
Sure.
One of the things that amazes me, because I know you have a fascination with cable television, which I think is interesting, okay? But there is something going on in TV right now that I think is important to mention on public television called Wired Science. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Language
on the
Science, I haven't seen it, so tell us all about what you're talking about. By the way, I've only had television for a little over a year, so it's like a fascination, like with a new thing. I'm going to be 60 years old next month, and I've had television more or less for 1 year. So it's kind of a weird thing.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I used to watch, yeah,
well, the good thing is, if I could even help you and all the people listening, what's really interesting is that there's a new show on public television called Wired Science.
Okay.
It's available to everybody that probably has access to public television in their analog channels or cable, et cetera. And they're just now wrapping up the first season. But the good thing about it is it's not like any other public television show that's ever been done before. It's in collaboration with Wired Magazine, which is trying to bridge technology and also science together. That's what it is. So you could see where it's kind of intersecting with what you do. So
yeah.
We're talking a little bit about the energies and how they move around. And what happens is some of it is, and because they're doing it responsibly and the stories are so original, and it models the magazine, if you've ever seen a Wired magazine, there's a website.
I haven't, so go on.
It's just simply science and spirit together. So they have like, They deal with science, like astronomy, stories. Like if you were to look on their website. But anyway, they had a particular story that I just came across and I had to ask you. There was just no other way because I wanted your opinion on this. Is what's happening is because they're reporting on science stories and technology stories, sometimes spiritual stuff comes out of it. It's actually quite amazing.
Wow,
okay.
I'm going to have to watch this. When
and
is
you can
it
go on
there.
Anybody can go on their website.
Yeah.
Just type in Wired Science, and you get it. Google, whatever. And they put their entire show online.
Oh, great.
They put all the video clips, every single video clips, like these 10-minute video clips of each segment that they do. And it's so crazy that they actually put the show, the clips on the web before it even airs on Wednesday nights, regularly on PBS, 8 o'clock. But the funny thing is, they had this one particular story where they were taking they were doing this new thing, this new medical thing that kind of relates to technology. They were taking blind people, okay, blind from birth even, and they were using this technology that they would put something in their mouth, a sensor. Okay, and they taught this one blind guy, they taught him, like he was a guy who, he got blind for some years, but he used to play cards. They could actually show him symbols that's on the playing cards, like a regular deck of cards, and then the impulses on the sensor on the tongue could put the information on the sensor, and then shows up as an electrical charge on the tongue of what the number is of the card, what the suit is of the card, and then he could actually see these symbols through his tongue.
So
okay, the same thing happened with when a person gets sick and they lose their ability to when they lose their focus on inertia and they can't even tell when they're. Some people get sick and they lose that ability, and then something happens with their ears or something, and then they can't tell when their orientation. They put this thing in their mouth, and it's like a pendulum of electrical information, and it tells them when they're tilted over, and it goes onto the sensor, and then it stimulates the tongue. When you're out of balance, then the information changes. Now, the thing that's important about I'm asking you about this and to do with senses is after a while, like the people that lost their orientation, they could do it naturally and they can see through their tongue. They could get their balance back. They found that they would train on it, and as much times that they train with the thing in their mouth, the sensor, and then if they put 20 hours with this, then they can go 20 hours, approximately half and half. They can go and they get the same sensation through their tongue, and then they don't even need the sensor in their mouth anymore.
Okay, Don, let me tell you what I think is going on.
Yeah,
first of all,
please comment.
sure, I can comment. The senses that we identify with as the five senses, of course, I think there's seven. Two of them have to do with understanding and then understanding how to create more of God. But let's call the five senses, the people call material senses.
Mm-hmm.
Those five senses, which exist in each body that we live in, those five senses eventually are all connected together. So when we talk about them individually, that's only to gain some conceptual understanding of what each one has as a dominant factor. But together, they are the sense of that body, and they are equal one sense in a material sense. And therefore, if one is damaged for any reason due to either a physical or an etheric or electrical magnetic, in the case of a physical body, then the others can become accentuated and can grow more of this, we'll say, of a similar kind of sense that was actually harmed. And this has been known about for a long time. I mean, when you look at people who have any kind of sensory problem, they tend to develop more of the other senses that remain to compensate to some extent. Now, can they also replicate, which is what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
replicate a sense that they didn't originally have? And the answer is absolutely yes, because we're going way back to the 60s and 70s.
Totally fascinating, you know?
Yeah, going back to the 60s and 70s now, they found that people could re-educate their brains to pick up senses and to do other things that were impossible to be done by retraining. So it's possible to do all those kinds of things because we actually have only one sense. The one sense are these separated senses that we will say artificially identify as being individual. But they really are interconnected. That's my theory about the whole thing.
But that is just so amazing that they can get to this level and they can then go on their own. And there's people that do it after like a few years and then they don't even need the thing anymore and they can all of a sudden function in reality.
I think it's a wonderful thing. And I want to appreciate also your contribution today for calling in and telling us about that. I'm going to check out Wired Magazine and their program and the Wired Science on PBS.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll see if they'll accept an article from me or something like that. Because some of these magazines
It's totally amazing. It's a wonderful show. Just to give you another example, they just did. It's broken down exactly like the magazine. Like the website for the magazine is called Wired.com. But it's always been a technology science magazine, culture-ish kind of thing. But now it's kind of bridged the gap and now is on TV. They did a wonderful interview with Craig Venter, who is the guy, like all that stuff you heard about breaking down of the, like you can now send $1,000 and get and see your whole genetic makeup now and see what diseases. He is the guy that's responsible for that. And he was the one who found this and they did his own genetic makeup. He was the very first one.
Okay, listen, I've got to cut you short right now because otherwise we'll lose the rest of the show on Benedict.
Oh, no problem.
And I want to talk more about that.
Interview.
You have great ideas. You have a lot to say.
And it can all be seen on their website. No problem.
Okay. All right, listen, I will talk to you again soon, and you take care. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Take care now. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, so shall we move on now to talk about what are the benefits, I know this sounds terrible, of someone who dies karmically for us. Because I don't want us all to think we're all guilty, like we're doing something terrible. But, I mean, the whole world has some contribution to the karma of people that reach the level of Bhutto. Honestly, and I know that sounds, again, like, oh, Jesus is blaming us. No, I'm not blaming us. I'm blaming in nobody, in a sense. I'm saying let's all take a little responsibility and understand more about this. And so what this means is this, that the darkness that she was about to take on, that actually took her on and maybe killed her, of course, is also, in some ways, going to do the same to us at some point in the future. Her death delays that potential outcome. And her death could delay the outcome of 5,000, 10,000, who knows how many thousands of people dying. I know that sounds crazy, but it's the truth in my opinion. And so there is a consequence which is a positive one in a weird way, in that for some period of time, there may be some delay in the numbers of people who might suffer some harm as a result of the people who murdered her. And I think I would just call them Islamic crazies who are radical, mixed in with maybe people who are just extremely selfish and connected to the government in some way. But in all aspects, whoever they are, they're evil. And this evil has done several things. It has gone too far. Despite the fact there might have been some karmic reasons that allowed them to do, them being the evil, to do what they did, they also went too far, because I don't think that even based upon what all the countries have screwed up in doing and everything else, I think this is one of those rare moments, and I say they're fairly rare, where the dark side has extended itself into destruction that it cannot rely upon as being justified through karmic world and national world karma. I believe just the opposite. And I think that this means there will be a backlash, a significant backlash, that may significantly, and I think it will significantly, cut down evil in the not too distant future. Maybe in Pakistan, but certainly in other places. Some of those places that I was saying were making mistakes in maybe how they were dealing with Sharif, and maybe how they've been dealing with the geopolitical situations in the Middle East and other places as well. And so maybe we'll all get a little jolt of more consciousness and be able to undo some of the things that are presently looking very grim. The grim parts are that this is a woman, Bhutto, who could have made a significant improvement in change and contribution, probably would have made some change, if not significant. And now there's really like a vacuum. Many people say, well, there's nobody to take her shoes, you know, step in her shoes. There's nobody to do anything. Well, I think that in the short run, the very short run, like the next few weeks, that may be true. But I think someone will come along who can do, and it may be more than one, it may take several people, to do some of the things that she was going to do. But they may get more support from the United States and other countries than Benazir Bhutto was going to get. Now you might say, well, how come? Well, sometimes when someone is as advanced and as conscious as she is, people just don't notice her. It's hard for us to see those that are beyond us, that have this greatness within them, because we tend to see more of the, you know, the one people who are more like ourselves. And it's difficult for us to see those that have really stepped to a higher place, which she had done. That doesn't mean that she was perfect. Again, I don't want you to think I'm saying that. But it does mean that it would be more difficult to see her than maybe some of the people who might be her predecessors, collectively, because I don't think there's going to be one that can really be her, but there may be several who can do some of the things that she was going to do. Let's hope they get the support that I'm suggesting they may get, because they'll be more visible, and because we're going to be a lot more desperate. You know, this woman was willing to do things that almost no politician in this country is willing to do. She put her life on the line, and she knew there was a fairly high likelihood she was going to be killed. She said so. Read the letters that she wrote. And so the interesting thing here is that she didn't want to die, but I think she had a grasp on some of the concepts that I'm telling you tonight. And it's hard for me to even talk about this, because I feel the great loss, and I just want to more or less mourn her more than anything. But I also realize I need to tell you my opinions on these things, so that there's some, we'll call it, more rational understanding about why these sort of things take place in the world and what I think is going to be the outcome and future of it. Now, when we come back, I want to tell you even more of what I think the future may be for Benazir and also for her party and other people. And you say, for Benazir, well, isn't she dead? Well, death is just a passage onto another dimension of time and space. That's my opinion, and that's what I write about and explain. So, yeah, I'm going to go into a little bit about that, where she's headed for, because some of you would like to know that. And then, in addition, I would like to say about how others can help, how we might be able to help the situation. Because, after all, I think we're all a little responsible for it. Collectively, certainly we are. So let's think about that, and we'll be back in, a little over 2 minutes, and I'll continue on talking and eulogizing about this great political person.
Hey everyone, since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Back, and this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Thank you for being with us this evening. Tonight, I'm giving a conceptual eulogy of Benazir Bhutto, and some of the concepts which I don't think have been covered in anything I've heard so far, and I've been watching and listening to news broadcasts, etc., and the stuff I'm talking about tonight, I don't think I've heard anybody talk about it. So I guess it's worthwhile at least mentioning, if not going into even greater depth with. And one of the areas that I think it's important to understand is that death is a transition from one type of life to another. The focus of creation of a creator basically moves from the physical to a more astral, or some people call it emotional, I'm not sure I would use that word, type of existence, where the energy itself responds with greater dimensionality, but is also not dense physical. So it doesn't stay around as long or as easily as it would in the physical world, but it also is more changeable in a thought way and in an imaginative way so that people can create very easily in the astral dimensions. And when someone dies from this world within a short time, days to a week or so, They end up in the astral world. Some people go there almost immediately, by the way. I don't want it to sound like it's all the same experience, because actually there's a wide variety of experiences. But when someone is in the astral world, they live in one of seven major, or we'll call it minor, actually, parts of the dimension, but it's the big parts of the dimension. And each sub-world has in it a focus of a certain kind of one of seven types of energies. This is a little complicated, and I don't want to really go into it tonight. But for those of you who are interested in this, Benazir is going to be working mostly in the spiritual parts of the astral world, probably starting for a short time in what is called the second subworld, which mostly has to do with understanding how God functions better in an emotional way or astral way. And then going on to move into the first astral subworld, where she will be very politically involved. which was not surprising, and will get to complete, if not even create more of than she could have here, her whole political plan and agenda for even larger areas of in groups of people than maybe have been affected had she stayed alive in this world. So that will not be denied her. I don't want you to think that evil has completely, you know, chopped her up and thrown her away. It's just the opposite. She's liberated, in a sense, to be more creative in another place. But this is where God needs to be created the most. It's where evil really is doing the worst in terms of destruction. And it's also the place where we need to make the most beauty and truth and love available to everybody. And by starting with cooperation and sharing, which is so hard to get people to do these days, and even more so as you move into those other realms. So it's a great opportunity, in a sense, for someone to move on, but it's even more difficult, but yet more of a benefit to be able to do something while you're physically alive. Physical life, though, is extremely difficult. No kidding. We're all here and doing it. And it, for many people, it just doesn't work out the way we would like it to. You might also say, well, how come her soul would let her die? You know, I mean, isn't the soul involved in this death and timing thing? Yes, that's true. But again, the soul has to respond to the karmic events in time and space. And also, and this is going to sound another crazy thing, but I hope you can understand it. She's going to be back. And she'll be back sooner than later because she's died so early in this life. And when she comes back in her next life, she'll make even fewer errors and be even a greater, greater force in the world, assuming that the world survives. And there is always the danger that this sort of event, along with others, both natural, what they call natural catastrophes, as well as the humankind created, could lead to some drastic reductions in the numbers of people who will be alive in our world sometime in the not-too-distant future. I'm hoping not to have to see that. But regardless, she will be back sooner because the life expectancy, of course, moves on into the astral and eventually monastic worlds. And eventually she rejoins her soul in full consciousness. But will likely, in almost every case, this is true, choose to reincarnate, and when she does, she'll be back as another great being, not exactly the same as she was in this lifetime, but with all the benefits of having grown from this life and through the other sub-world lives in other dimensions of time and space. So the incredible thing about this is that maybe part of her soul's, we'll say, thought process is that she might be of greater value at some time that we have not yet conceived of what will be needed in the future than she is even today. It's hard to understand that from our perspective because she seemed like she had such a wealth of importance. She seemed like she could do so much with the capabilities that she had. But the wisdom of souls, far in a way, is greater than the collection of humans' understandings. And so all we can do is assume that God and the soul are really understanding better for ourselves than we are. Even though we say, oh, I can't understand why God would let this happen. Well, in a way, if you see the soul as an extension of its creator God, then ultimately this is what is supposed to happen, even though we don't completely fathom all of the factors. Hopefully today's show, though, will reveal some of those, and it won't be so much a shock and a disappointment. That isn't to say that we should just let this go and not be seeking to eliminate the evil that is causing these sorts of terrible events to take place. Murdering someone, anybody, is terrible, and murdering someone with the greatness of this woman is just an unbelievable crime. And those people involved will suffer consequences from this. sooner than later in this particular case, because again, as I was saying in the last segment, I really do think that evil has gone beyond even the karma of the entire world to allow itself to do this. And that what that means is that there are consequences to be paid sooner than later for the evil that did this. Now, if this turns out, as I suggest, within the next year or two, I would suggest we will see some unusual changes. Unfortunately, it may take the next election in the U.S. before we really see the results, because our present administration seems to be bogged down in limited consciousness. Now, that's not to be disrespectful to anyone in this administration. It just seems as though they don't see the big picture very often. And the big picture shows consciousness. It shows the ability to be giving on a wiser and greater scale to the, you know, the maximum out for the maximum amount of people the most amount of the time. You have heard of that. I just don't see that happening in our present political picture. But then again, I listen to a lot of the people who claim to have the answers for it, or the politicians that presently are running, and some of them don't impress me as being much better. So I don't know. For those of you who might want my opinion on that, although we'll have a future show on it, I think that in the Democratic Party, I think that Obama is probably the more conscious of the candidates. That's just my opinion. I'm not telling you who to vote for, but you can certainly think about things. And that's what I've been saying. And in terms of the Republicans, this is going to sound strange because it seems almost like diametrically opposite. But I think the more of the leading people now, I'm not talking about of all candidates, of the leading people, I think that Huckabee is probably the more conscious of the candidates in the Republicans. You might say, well, Huckabee, isn't he a guy who just wants to be a religious fanatic of some sort? No, I don't find it at all. I find a guy who's he happens to be on a path of religion and finds himself able to focus on his creator more through a religion than some other people might. But and definitely not my necessary chosen belief structure either. But I can look at this man and I can tell you that, you know, he seems more conscious. That means he has probably the ability to lead us in various ways better. So those two, and you could, you know, and to just to name a couple other ones that aren't leading candidates, I think of Joe Biden, who's been around for a long time in the Congress, has an amazing consciousness in many respects. But sometimes I listen to him and he talks too much about himself. Joe, if you're listening, stop talking so much about yourself and probably focus just on the issues, and you'll do better, in my opinion. And then in the Republican camp, you know, there's some unusual candidates that are barely on the fringes that have shown some moments, we'll say, of consciousness and higher levels. But none of those things really change the bottom line. If we're going to change our world, we all have to take greater responsibility for choosing to find the best leaders like Bhutto. Because if we can choose and we can elect people more like her than the people we've been electing, we will change this world towards better. And that's one of the things that we are going to gain from, unfortunately, not having them around. When you miss somebody, you think more about maybe the reasons and whys and the mistakes you've made in the past, and you do something to change. And I think she will help that in her not being here with us. And so maybe it will affect our next election by people saying, you know, if we just had someone like Benazir Bhutto as president, it would be a great, great thing. Even though when she was running around part-time at Harvard and other parts of the United States, nobody seemed to notice her. Now, I think it's important because this could be one of the gifts that she leaves as the beneficial side of her having, unfortunately, the karma to be removed from us at this time in this dimension. And it's important to realize that the qualities that she had, if you took the two candidates that I mentioned, I think are the present semi-front runners, and they're not the obvious, the highest ones at this moment, but they're up there, that I think are the more conscious ones, and you kind of combine them together in some way. Am I suggesting anybody should do this? It'd be a kind of a crazy experiment if we could do it even. And you could make them into one person of sorts. Between the two, I think you would have a Bhutto. I think you would actually end up with someone closer to the way she was actually, while she was alive and communicating with us. So that's something to consider, that here we can maybe identify these things in these two, particularly these two men. I have absolutely nothing against any women in politics, by the way. Obviously, that's true, because Bhutto was a woman, obviously. But I think it's important that gender is much less a factor than is consciousness. We shouldn't be voting because someone has a gender that we either like or don't like. That's like nuts. What we should be doing is being concerned about, is this the person who can really see the big picture and who is really a leader? Now, leadership is a little different than just being conscious. Leadership is that ability that Bhutto had to give people confidence in themselves through the confidence they have in themselves to deal with things that are difficult to deal with, such as evil, but there are many other issues than just evil, and to do so in a way that is humble and straightforward and that doesn't make excuses for itself most of the time. Those are the things we should be looking for in the people that we elect, because she had those qualities, I'm sure you can say so. And by giving them to us and letting us now see them, unfortunately in her death, we can apply them for the rest of our lives, here and now. Many people say that her death is going to cause those that are seeking vengeance and more military and more security and this and that to be victorious. I don't think so. I doubt that that's true. Now, of course, a year from now, I guess we'll know. But I think the point is, I think just the opposite. I don't think that it's really a quality of taking on, some vengeful position to deal with this kind of circumstance. Although our president yesterday seemed to have a response that was similar to that. Y'all knows that it did this, will meet justice. That was his speech. I don't see it that way. I think it's better to say the way to overcome this is by electing people that resemble this great woman and by recognizing the tremendous gifts that she was giving and could have continued to give and that we are now missing. If we can do that, we can then reach out for the people who have some of these qualities, but probably not all of them, just like I was talking about, and put the right people, finally, into office who will do the sorts of things that all of us are hoping, I think, really, truly, wanting our government and other governments to be doing. And I'm not talking about any specific policy right now. Policies are things that sometimes are fluid and change, even among the same administration. But the more important thing is leadership and consciousness. And if they have those things, then we're on the right track. We've done very poorly in recent times in this category. So we need to really make the improvements. Okay, I hope this has all been helpful. I hope this show today has maybe shed some new light on something that has been very, very tragic. I send love to all of us to try to understand and to gain the missing parts that are now gone from us in this world. This Sunday, I'm going to be on the 1170 AM, the station over in Boston. And if you're anywhere in the Northeast, you can get it on 1170 AM, or you can listen to internet radio at WDISAM.com. And the show topic is the physics and metaphysics. It'll be on from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time, or anywhere in between that if you happen to be listening. So please, if you have a chance, go and listen to that. And I guess I'm running out of time, so hopefully this has been a show that has given you a new idea on some things. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.